There's a great and a bloody fight round this whole world tonight. In the battle, the bombs and shrapnel rain. Hitler told the world around he would tear our Union down. But our Union's gonna break them slavery chains. And our Union's gonna break them slavery chains.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic is in. Let's have this synthesis of popular Game of Buddy post-apocalyptic wasteland and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I'm seriously considering, just because of your sheer determination to refuse to acknowledge my royal credentials, and the fact that, all cops are bastards, death to kings.
No kings, no masters.
Only the grill. anyway, so last week, something surely happened last week. Was all I can remember is the week before last, when we gathered up our armies, we made Hitler the revolutionary Führer to resist the vile hordes of the East. Yeah. The harbingers, like, okay, the only, yeah, I think literally the only thing I remember from last week is that we found out the harbingers have abandoned the baddies because they're white, I guess. Like they realize that they're on the side of the loathsome foreign hordes and jump ship. And so now we have these like religious fanatics on team good guy. We're distinct from the religious fanatics on team bad guy, which really does highlight that that the only thing that designates the bad guys as the bad guys is their brownness.
It's their brownness and their belief in a different god, really. that's not a bad idea. No, not at all.
Oops. Whoopsie doopsie.
It's not like the original story wasn't partly written as a sort of call out to the entirety of the Iraq War or anything like that. I mean, like the original Fall Equestria, not the original Fallout, mm-hmm. obviously. But yeah, really, all that else happened was just a lot of them gaining allies and kind of just finding out that nothing matters again. Because
more and more people turned out to have never died. things never died and were never destroyed.
Everyone had parachutes.
God, I wish I remember what it was that, I'm vaguely remembering that did that joke. I think it was the Venture Brothers. Don't worry, they have parachutes. But he was hit by, the annihilation laser. All the matter was, no, look, parachutes. They're fine. it's even funnier, leading up to the high stakes of the final battle against Ultimate Evil, and, how do you establish that things are serious? Oh, that no one has ever died.
Well, a bunch of people have died.
I expect to find out that it turns out those babies that, she killed in book one in the tubes. Because she did that, they're now fine.
they're healthier than ever.
Any chapter now, might even be in the epilogue. God. Oh, yeah, she reconciled with one of her rapists.
Yeah. Yeah, Captain Date Rape.
Anyway, yeah, so, does anything happen in this chapter? Can we just skip to the end and you tell me whether or not, anything of substance happened at all? I don't think I need to be tortured with, the details, the exquisite individual instances of nothing happening and, indeed, previous events unhappening.
Yeah, just speed run to this. You can get it out of bounds by bouncing on my head enough times and clipping out of one of the corners.
If I pour my water bottle in my left ear instead of my mouth, While I jump kick Fi, if I can rotate at the correct angle toward the wall, I'll clip through it.
And you'll get to the end of the podcast. And we'll be like a couple of months from now. Anyways, oh man. Chapter 71, Ignition. I gave this one two subtitles. Almost Stuff Happens is one of them. And the other one is, boy, am I going to be repeating myself a lot this chapter. I honestly, like, legitimately read this chapter and was, like, struggling of thinking of, like, things I haven't said about the story already and what I could possibly, like, glean as new information from it. Because this is the most, like, business-as-usual chapter I've ever seen. Like, it's not, like, it's not like the cool-down chapters where nothing happens. It's just that, like, nothing new happens. Like, this is just kind of, like, standard operations for Blackjack. God, some of my notes are pretty clunky. There's a really weird opening that's trying to be, like, symbolic again, and it's really weird. Basically, Blackjack feels dead, and she's, like, describing herself as a ghost and talking to herself in this weird, vague person. Like, it's another one of those situations where, like, these kind of ramblings don't work because they make sense to a degree from, like, a narrator describing it, but, like, of talking about, like, a character in vagary as an effort to try and, like, compel the reader to think, like, the protagonist is feeling more hollow or distant from other people. But, like, if it's a character that's actually saying this about themselves, it's a lot goofier sounding. Like, this is just something that the story has always struggled with.
If it were in the third person limited, maybe this would work.
The story has always struggled with this, that, like, it really should have been told by the third person and not by the first person, because it's just harder to be, like, it's hard to pontificate when your character is also canonically an idiot.
And furthermore, having tried to read it myself, like, he really struggles with, like, because he has something he specifically wants to do, and he, like, it really fucks with the, it becomes incredibly obvious, even at this late stage, that Somber doesn't understand what a character voice is.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't speak in his first person text in the character. Mm-hmm. Of Blackjack. And something that's kind of interesting is that this actually relates to an obsession I've had for a little while, anime manga light novel with a sort of an isekai, hilariously long title, most often abbreviated to Death Flag Otome. I'm going to try and keep this brief. Long and short of it is that the character is profoundly stupid, like overwhelmingly pure of heart and dumb of ass. Mm-hmm. But the weird thing is the original light novel that I've been able to find translations of is told in the first person. Like, it's a shifting first person, so it's not always from our heroine's perspective, but most of it is from our heroine's perspective. And it is in her voice. She is very, very dumb and extremely dense and oblivious to her surroundings, but the author manages to all the same communicate what is happening around her. Like, that she is capable of observing what is actually happening. Her, like, observation is very cute, and it's very obvious, like, what is really happening compared to, like, in the subtext, compared to, like, the immediate text of what she thinks is happening. So I don't know, Somber, read that! If you read it all, you hack!
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's a minor gripe in comparison to a lot of other things in the story, but it's one of those things that always really strikes me is that, like, Blackjack doesn't think like a... Like, I was gonna say thinks like a dumb person, but doesn't think the way she acts, which is, like, that of, like, a, like, drunken moron who, like, admits that she's dumb and doesn't know most things. But, like,
in her first person, in the narrative text, she has a very good elocution.
Yeah, and I was trying to think of the good word for it. It was elocution. And it's really, like, telling. I just wrote stupid, dumb storytelling, and I don't remember why. Like, I legitimately don't remember why. Oh, it's because so much of this is just spent on, like, continuing to wring their hands over, like, God, like, the, like... This is a really jarring thing about book 5, and it comes up really, like, in these last few chapters. It's really, like, it's, like, I've talked about before about how, like, after the events of, like, book 2, and, like, once Blackjack becomes a robo-cyber Jesus, the story becomes just not a Fallout story, as far as I'm concerned. Like, almost all of the trappings of the genre and the medium just are completely stripped away, and it's a lot more of just like a generic like adventure action story. Like, this kind of does that again, where like it sort of sloughs off all of the like adventure elements of the story, and it kind of just becomes like war drama fiction, which I'm not a particularly big fan of personally. There's a lot of instances of like smart men in boardrooms talking about how to like flank and like what the plans are and how like they're all gonna do stuff. There is a really like overly elaborate plan here. So like the remnant of the Zebras and the Brood are all like hole up in a place called the Luna Space Center, which is because that it has working rockets, and that's how they're planning on getting to the moon. There's a lot of time spent on talking about their their area of egress, like their attack plan on like what they're actually going to do. And there's a lot of like talking about like, by this point, Alicorns are kind of their own people again. And like, I don't know. This is another petty thing that really bothers me about Alicorns, is I hate that Somber takes credit for them. So like, not to go
oh,
into
yeah, because he hacked, like he'd like reverse double reach around and explain that, well, no, you see, the reason that they all have free will again is because of my OCs.
Yeah, and I kind of just hate that. Like, it's Blackjack shedding bloody tears in the rain over Lacuna's sacrifice and how honorable it was. Just, like, it just really just doesn't sit well with me. There's also, like, a part where she, like, boy, this is that worrying suicidal ideation thing going up again, where she's like, it's not fair, she died an honorable death, like, what will I have? Why do I have to be the last one to die? And it's just like it's a combination of the world's tiniest violin and being like you're right there, buddy. Like, warrior death's kind of the worst thing. Wouldn't you be better off trying to live instead?
Keep coming back to it, and I wish like I could stop hammering at this, but it keeps coming up. Like, yeah. it won't stop.
This podcast. This podcast has become a weird, surreal meditation on itself.
He won't stop being fascist. Like, he won't stop. If I haven't mentioned it before, the slogan of the Spanish fascists, Franco's regime, was "Viva la muerte," long live death. Like, they. Like, people like Somber are servants of anti-life. They want to kill everyone. They do not see the value in living and living a better life for anyone. Like, their goal is to achieve the supreme death and live only in service to death. It sounds melodramatic on the face of it. Like, you can accuse me of being hyperbolic, but I'm increasingly convinced that it's very obviously literal. Like, they're people who think like Somber are basically like cut-rate supervillains. They're supervillains without any of the like pomp and flair of fictional supervillains. It's all very terrifying and yet pathetic.
Anywho, so the Alicorns like fly them over because for some reason there's some magical bullshit last minute hoo-ha. That means that they can't just teleport in for some reason, because it's another one of those instances of Somber immediately running himself into a corner. It's like, well, if I want to have Alicorns in the story, wait a second, a third of those could just teleport. Shit, fuck, I fucked up. All right, Luna Center just has like a mysterious anti-teleportation field. So instead they just like, this is a scene that you're going to have to bear with me. Like I understand, believe me, no one understands silly this setting is. The idea of battle saddles, mouth guns, ponies fighting post-apocalyptic war, all that shit is silly. Something really got my goat about them flying overhead, airdropped by Alicorns, and them deploying parachutes so that they can fly in covertly and clandestine onto this, like, military base so that they can go fight zebra monsters. Like, it's just the surrealness of it really just like snapped in a sharp focus of like how stupid all of this is. Like, it's just because it's just devolved into war fiction. It's another one of the instances where like it doesn't like matter that these characters are like ponies in a magical world.
Small, colorful horses, yeah.
This is like, they can't teleport in, so they can't use magic, so magic is just, like, exempt from the story now, basically. Or, like, the more interesting elements of magic are just exempt from the story, and it's just down to telekinesis. So, like, it's, there's no difference between writing a story that, like, has this and just generic war fiction, and that just feels like, really just not taking a liberty, like, taking advantage of the setting that you're provided. Like the best thing about Fall Equestria to me is the weird, goofy Arcanotech solutions to it being a post-apocalyptic world, and gutting that for just generic war fiction is really boring to me as a artistic decision.
I mean, if the Zebras have all these this cool technomagic shamanic shit, like, you could create some sort of conflict around that. How about?
Yeah,
That, like, they can't teleport directly in. There is, like, interference that must be confronted. They can't just block teleportation flatly, but, like, it makes things more complicated in some interesting way. But no, let's have some fucking Jack Ryan, but a horse. And to such an extent that it's very easy to forget they're even horses.
And it was just very, very jarring to me. It's just
whatever.
It's just one of those boats where it's like deployed in my parachute really made me lose it. But yeah, they end up in the Luna Space Center. It's just like platform that fires space missiles into the air. Man, a lot of this chapter is just fighting, as these often are. But like they get to the space center and like there's a bunch of missiles, like there's a bunch of rockets that are poised to get launched. And of course, like the biggest one is the one that like Conatum is hanging around and it's getting prepped so that they can get to the moon. There's a kind of funny moment where, like, they, like, use binoculars to look at, like, Cognitim, and Cognitim is, like, gone whole ham on leaning into the, like, Dark Lord of Evil thing that is really funny to me. She wears a crown now, her armor is, her armor and cybernetics are even more bullshit and, like, scary and ornate, and, like, because of fusing with Luna...
More pointy bits! More! I demand it as your sovereign!
And because she's fused with Luna now, she has, like, the princess effect, but, like, because it's Blackjack's mane, which is... For people that haven't been keeping score, her mane is, like, black and red stripes. So she just has this, like, giant miasma of black and red fire burning off of her head at all times. Kind of cool, but it's just not well served by this villain who is, like, another dumb moron who, like... is so incompetent that none of her, like, underlings trust her at all.
All-Star screams all day! Not a Scorponok or a Soundwave in sight!
Oops, All-Star screams! BJ also uses the Percepto Bajiggy to watch Conatim from her perspective. And, like, this is another one of the scenes where it's like, I don't really know what to say about it, because it's just Conatim being evil and mean, and, like... Like, we don't need more heel heat for the main villain. Like, she's planning on killing the whole world and turning into a techno-organic paradise. Like, it's very goofy, the idea of, like, we don't need this heel heat, and it's, it doesn't serve the story at all to, like, show us the main villain being bad more, because it doesn't, like, we already hate her. Like, why would, like, we can't hate her more, so the scene is relevant. And it really, and doubly so that, like, the Legate has gone, like, is, like, very obviously planning on betraying her even more. Because she's like, oh, once I get to the moon, I'll be able to do my evil plan. And just kind of like, whatever. Like, he's, like, very obviously flippant, which is just kind of one of those moments of, like, Starscream. Why is the main villain tolerating this shit? And I mean, like, the actual answer is because, like, the Legate is the real true antagonist, and he would be able to take her out within a second, and, like, she's irrelevant. But, cool. She's very mean, and...
She's very mean, and nasty, and you should hate her, too.
But, like, we already hate her. Like, she's planning on turning the world into, like, an evil murdered apocalypse, like, a double apocalypse. Like, we just... There is no scope into which to make her more villainous seeming.
It does waste time. Like, I could make a devil's advocate argument that, like, There's always more like heel heat you can put on. I mean, a good example is like the purple wedding of Game of Thrones. Like the last time the show was ever any good was the Joffrey dies, and like that entire episode or like chapter, I guess, in the context of the book, was all about just really rubbing it in, just making sure, like, hey, you've been with this little fuck for episodes and episodes, seasons, books and books. You already hate him pretty bad, but let me just like really make sure, like, in case you forgot, just before the big, like, it's under normal circumstances, it's good booking, but because we like already there's no tension, there's like zero tension as to whether or not like he's gonna get away with anything, and also because like Somber betrays himself again, like we would, in case you've forgotten or in case you're new to the podcast, sometimes we talk in wrestling metaphors. Booking is the process by which like you sell your audience a match in wrestling, and this would almost be good booking in that like you want more heat for the heel, and heat is sort of audience interest, is audience emotional investment. But at the same time, you undermine it all by like making it clear that they're not the real heel here, like that they don't have any like power, that they're not, that you're booking them as weak, that like they're like it's hard to hate a heel that is ultimately weak and is bound to be defeated. There's no tension about whether or not the baby faces are gonna beat her, because like if they don't, then the real heel that's like sitting just off stage is gonna do it. Like, it's boring.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, would also work if like we also liked the like usurper in any way either. Like, because you can have that in a lot of stories where it's like, you know, you have the big, like, melodramatic main villain, and then just the guy being like, yeah, you know, like, I was kind of just, like, waiting for you to eventually just, like, fall on your own spear, but I guess I could just do it because, like, I don't care anymore. And if they're, but they're, they have to be, like, affable and, like, villainous in a way that we find compelling, but, like, the Legate is neither.
Yeah. I don't know, if this were a real story by a real author who created things instead of siphoning
them.
You could have a real, real mind blow of a reversal in which the Legate is brought to heel in this moment. Like, you know, I think I've had just about enough of your tone.
And then just blasts him into space or just eviscerates him somehow. Anyways, oh boy. Here's another one of the situations I've been waiting the entire podcast to yell about. It's time for the zebra cultists. So there's a weird undercurrent of like what's happening too, where like this is like one of those things that really like really bothers me, is that like, so here's where all that mythology is finally coming to head. The zebra remnant, like the ones that are like sentient, that aren't just evil cyber zombie monsters. Sakashi, the like rad storytelling mom, is like, her plan is she's gonna try and convince the remnant that like the Legate is a Starkadori and therefore not to be trusted. Which like
appeal to their micro racism.
Well, basically, like it's. It's like, listen,
our heroes, folks.
Listen, we can't be racist. And we have to come down because we have to hate that guy specifically for being the wrong race. Those dirty Starkadori. The thing that really like cements this deal is that they like go like they're gonna seize the command center, because they're like, the idea is like, well, if we could just stop the rocket, then we don't have to worry about this. And like part of that is them running into like these basically mini bosses that are like, okay, so here's a nefarious element that really does not sit very well with me, is that the Starkadori are all like hunched over wearing cloaks, doing prophecies and magic, and they're like yelling the names of their dark gods, specifically because they worship the stars, and like all of the stars are named after Lovecraftian elder gods, which like, boy, like let me tell you folks, like, it's pretty well known that Lovecraft is a massive racist. I think few people really don't understand like the concept of like, in Lovecraft's stories, he would portray brown people as evil for worshiping dark gods, just kind of by their own nature, because they were too bestial to believe in good gods.
Oh, it actually gets worse than that. In the original Call of Cthulhu, and it's referenced in a bunch of other stories, Cthulhu worshippers are overwhelmingly colonized brown people who worship Cthulhu and the other outer gods with the promise of eventual liberation. They're literally Antifa super soldiers, basically.
And Lovecraft hated them.
Yes.
So, like, it's just kind of always a bad look to use this kind of stuff, especially, like, compounding it all together in a way that doesn't really, like, criticize the usage of it. Like, this is, like, we talk a lot about, like, the racism inherent in the story, but, like, this is pretty, like, primo racism to have, like, your evil zebras that are a minority within an already existing minority worshipping dark gods, directly referencing Lovecraft's insanely racist writings about dark-skinned people. Like, come on, like, fuck off. But that's not even the bad part of this scene. The bad part of the scene is that, well, they're fighting them with, like, this, and they all have, like, scary magic that they don't understand. But while this is happening, there's one of them who's, like, deftly dodging, okay, because I have to back up and explain this. There's a bit in it where, like the youngest one of them pulls down her, like, hood, and I don't remember why, but, like, it takes a second to talk about how attractive everyone in the room thinks she looks for a zebra. It describes, like, her soft and graceful-looking face, and she's trying, like, first, she basically is the same age as Scotch, is the problem. According to Ward of Somber, Blackjack is, like, under 18, which would make Scotch, because she is a baby, like, anywhere from the range of, like, 14 to 12. Just keep that in mind, folks. And the part that I super don't like about this scene is that, like, as they're fighting him, she's making predictions. I think her name's Pythia. Whatever, Pythia, I think, is her name. And she's making predictions because they're trying to just suss out what's going to happen, because the prophecies that they're doing is going wrong, because they can't, like... Basically, BJ is trying to convince them that, like, the Legate is scamming them and that they need to, like, leave because he has no plan for the Starkadderi people, because he just worships the Eater of Souls. And, like, the entire... Like, that doesn't matter, but, like, the thing that really sticks out to me about this is that, like, the entire time Scotch is trying to, like, fight her and not getting, like, a hold on her, and, like... We get told, like, a couple of times how attractive everyone thinks that this little girl looks, and the scene ends with Scott talking about how attractive her ass looks. If I remember correctly, too, like, Pythia is, like, a 200-year-old immortal, so she's, like, she is, in fact, a 200-year-old zebra loli.
Oh, man. I'm so glad this is almost over. Like, I am actually, I don't know. I've been performatively, like, I've been performatively outraged and in pain. And many times over this podcast, I have actually made exclamations of sincere soul terror.
Death knells, we like to call them.
But, like, I'm running out. out. Like, I can only take so many more body blows.
I can only yell, like, so much. Oh, man. We haven't even hit the bad one for this kind of stuff yet. But, yeah, I don't, like... So, like, I especially don't like the tone of the way Scotch and Pythia are referred to it between each other. Specifically God. Because I know she's in the sequel, which is about Scotch predominantly. And it's, like, one of those things where it's important to remember. Either this is bad because Scotch and Pythia are, like, children, and the way that the story refers to them is really deeply pedophilic in that way, or it's problematic because if, like, they ever enter a relationship, Pythia is 200 years old and, like, an adult despite being in her, like, physical child body. So there's no way she's not taking advantage of Scotch in that scenario. Like, it's just all bad. The whole thing's bad. Just throw it out. Fuck. I'm so discombobulated by this fucking stupid scene. They don't really add anything to the story besides the fact of, like, Somber being like, oh yeah, fuck, I made Starkadderi thing, and they never show up in the story. And, like, I don't know, there's just something really, like, unsavory about the idea that this entire... A huge chunk of the story hinges on the idea that the main villain is, like, a racial minority, and that's bad.
Pack me up in a box and mail me to an invalid address.
Like, that part is very unsavory. But anyways, I guess we should move on. Glory starts raising a whole bunch of death flags all of a sudden again.
Okay.
Because she's like, well, shucks, someone's got to stay here at the command center to, like, get the rocket ready. And I'm the only one with the technical know-how to do so. And you're going to need someone, like, and you're going to need somebody on the platform to help you out. So you're going to need Scotch there with you. So I'll just stay behind. And also, like, I'm narratively expendable is basically what she says. There's a really dumb, and there's also a dumb thing about her being, like, talking about the idea of maybe reconciling her relationship with Blackjack again, but, like, saying, like, tomorrow, like, whatever happens, like, tomorrow we'll talk about it. And so, like, that kind of thing always just raises up massive death flags. So, you know, put a pin in that. Cog does the only smart thing in the entirety of this fucking book in terms of a villain. Blackjack, like, shows up and, like, the rocket's, like, primed and ready to go, and Cog is ready to leave, and BJ's like, fight me, like, you know, like, I'm here, I'm ready to fight you, let's rumble. And Cog is like, why would I? And then she flies away. Like, it's like, not to give too much credit to this, but, like, the fact that Cog is like, well, you've killed literally everyone that you've ever fought, and, like, I have a deadline, and I also don't need to fight you to win. Bye! And then flies away. She gets in her rocket and flies away.
I wonder who wrote that.
Yeah, me too.
That's just my running meme at this point. Like, if an idea was, like, good or at all well executed, I wonder who wrote that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not giving Somber credit for anything anymore at this point. Like, I am so burned on, like, every time it seems like we could give him credit for something, it turns out it was somebody else at the helm, or something that he lifted from somebody without accreditation. Like,
and now the legacy.
Very funny, whoever wrote that. Yeah. Good on you.
Good job. Good job, one of Somber's various ghostwriters or editors. Yeah, my line here is just, the legate is here, and fight happens. Because, boy, did, like, the legate has the same issue that, like, all other antagonists have in the story, but, like, it really does feel like what would, like, fighting Rampage would really be like in the story, which is just, like, lol, nothing affects me, so what do I care? I don't know, there's something that really, really bothers me about this, where, like, there's a part where, like, the legate gets blasted in the chest and explodes, and it obviously doesn't kill him, but, like, I don't know, like, we've talked about before about how, like, the legate being invincible is a lot more interesting if he doesn't just have, like, generic resurrection skills. But, like, the thing that really sticks about this to me is, like, the last time we ever saw the legate, he was, like, and he fought. He, like, was, like, cartoonishly agile. Basically nothing touched him. His evasion was set to max. So, like, this moment of him no-selling getting exploded does kind of, like, feels off to me. Like, I don't know how to describe it very well, but it just kind of doesn't feel like the way that the legate should be written to be fought. Is that, he doesn't come across to me as a character that, like, would even sustain damage if he can help it in the first place.
Because it's undignified. Like, it would, you know.
This is another one of us, like, ghostwriting a better villain than actually exists, obviously. The idea of, like, the legate as being a person who have, like, utmost authority is something that's really been sticking in my brain. But yeah, they fight a tank. The brood's here, the harbingers are here fighting the brood. There's a stupid fucking thing where, like, Blackjack, like, announces she's Blackjack to legate. He's like, no, you die, there's no way that could happen, which is, like, a stupid thing for him to say.
Him specifically, as apparently, like, both a master of arms and an arch wizard.
But it's because of this stupid thing where it's like she leans really hard into the whole, like, Maiden of Stars prophecy thing, but which is also stupid because he made it up.
Explicitly, like, said a few chapters ago, Somber, in your own story, Somber.
It gets
he doesn't believe in it. That he doesn't care. Like,
it gets double retconned by Sakashi in this, that no, it's actually a long-standing prophecy that's older than the legate, and that he was just using it. But, like, the thing, I don't know, I guess I just, like, gave the story too much credit by, like, assuming that because he's, like, at least 200 years old. He, like, the thing I always assume, because he's like a master ancient wizard fighter, that like that's invulnerable and immortal, that he's just been around so long that, like, oh, you know that
he's
prophecy?
He's seen dozens of liches, and he has implausibly destroyed them.
Well, like, I also met the idea that, like, oh, this prophecy is older than zebra, like, all zebra mythology, and then finding out it's like, oh, yeah, it's because I wrote it personally, like, and he's just...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's what I just assumed.
That would be a hell of a, like, Sakashi, but no, that prophecy is, like... been around since the dawn of known history, and so have I.
But there's a stupid thing where she's like, I'm the Maiden of Stars, baby. She the story does another thing where the main character congratulates themselves on how cool they are by rattling off all the dumb things they've survived and done.
Yeah, and you did all that with your ass magic. The tattoo on the magic tattoo on your ass that's no longer there.
Yeah.
So now what?
Apparently that never mattered. Cause she, there's a really
the rubber sticker was in your heart all along.
Of course. There's a part where she like gets a moment of breather and as like, basically like one of her like legs gets twisted up like a pretzel by the legate and Sakashi has to fix it. And they talk about the idea that like, no, you're not the Maiden of Stars. Instead, you're the fool, you know, from the tarot, which, like, man, fuck off, Sombra. Like, this is too late to do this. It's too late to introduce the idea that, like, the tarot cards matter, and she's the symbolic fool.
Also, for that to be true, she would have had to have gone on a journey of growth! She would have had to have been a different person.
The problem is, the problem is people only, like, read the fool as, like, chaotic change and not the, like, you know, also it's about
the zeroth number, the protagonist of the story of the other 20 aces, the fool is zero because he journeys through the major arcana, becoming each of them on his travel until he eventually reaches and becomes the world. Somber, you God damn it, this piece of shit is probably doing this because he, like, played or watched a Let's Play or something of one of the fucking Persona games recently. And the Persona game, like, yeah. The beginning of each Persona game has, like, explainer du jour tell you that, like, you are very special because your persona is the fool, meaning you can shift between all of them
and grow
because you're zero. Like,
yeah, I don't know, because it's I think it's a little bit more I think it's more just read a Wikipedia article about it, because there's like a later part, I do not remember when this comes up, but it comes up that like Blackjack's card based key mark isn't just about blackjack and winning all the time. It's also, they're also the minor arcanas that symbolize different things that no one ever thought about blackjack. And it's like, you just, like, you didn't set this up, and you just, like, we don't have time. Like, you have, like, what, like, 6 chapters left? We don't have time to have, like, thematic, like, meditations on your character like this that have never been brought up before.
This is an idea and a note to, like, put aside for a different story, Sopper!
Yeah, do this in the sequel. When you have, I don't know what Blackjack's, like, child's names are. It's like Billowette and Baccarat, I think. Christ, because actually I should flip to my next page. We're almost done, actually.
I kind of want to look up, like, okay, what are suits are supposed to be, and, like, actually, like...
Yeah, the suits...
And be mad that Sombra fucked up the like, common interpretations of those minor arcana. Because I know he did.
He's very dumb. My vague having dated a pagan once recollection of the minor arcana, it's like aces, like spades is swords?
Clubs.
It's clubs?
I think spades, so wait a minute, so spades is swords, clubs is staves, but I guess hearts would be cups, and so diamond would be...
Yeah, and Blackjack's cutie mark is specifically a ace of spades and a queen of hearts. Pretty sure. It's been a little while.
So the one of swords, swords are almost always bad for my recollection.
Well, no, swords are like active. We don't have time to do this. we super don't have time to do this. But anyways, but yeah, Legate turns out he's actually really scared of the whole Maiden of Stars thing. This is one of those things with a very minimal amount of writing. I can honestly believe this to a certain degree of like, it's like, but like, I made that up. That's stupid. But like, maybe she is anyways. Like, just being so like rattled by it that they for a moment kind of believe it, and that's what gives them an edge. But like, no, he just seemingly just is actually afraid that she is like the real Maiden of Stars. Because like, of course she is. Because like, all theories in the setting are true. So there are no, there is no nuance or implication in the story. It's always just direct truth. But yeah, he gets blasted a whole bunch, and it's really boring. And then like, I guess for the first time in the entire story, since like book one, 21 remembers he can do something, and like, they're like fighting on the like rocket pad as they're getting stuff ready. And I guess like, well, I guess it would make sense, but like. They have like a just like a canister full of nitrogen, I guess, or like a nitrogen vent. So like specifically liquid nitrogen, so it's super duper cold. And they just like freeze the Legate with it. Like specifically 21 does it. He gets like the weakest one-liner I've ever heard. Where like the Legate is starting to really lose it, and he's like, you know, I'm the chosen one. I'm the king of kings. I'm invincible. And then some, like 21 just responds with invincible this, which is just like,
not even like, hey, you should chill.
Yeah.
Like, fuck.
Gonna be put on ice.
Chill out, man.
You know what killed the dinosaurs?
What happens to a king when you expose him to temperatures approaching absolute zero? Same thing as anything else. Same thing as a frog.
Yep. but yeah, I guess cool. They did that. There's a lot of like, there's meant to be a lot of tension here, where like the Legate is like actively trying to waste their time by like stalling and mocking Blackjack, and like it actually does a pretty good job of that. But like, and he's also like, I've also sent all of the brood to go attack Glory, which like. I mean, it's one of those moments where it's really, like, it kind of threw me for a hot second of, like, why would the Legate even know her name? It's not, like, a big deal, but, like, I guess, like, I'm so used to the cliche of, like, I don't even know who any of your, like, companions are. and they're just whelps to me or whatever. Like I really just expected them to be like, oh, you're whore or something like that, you know? Like, you're wretch. I'm sent my guards to...
I don't know. It's just rolling off of me like
I know it's sort of those
somber things. Is bad. This is bad.
It's not really it's really not a big deal. It just really stuck out to me. I'm just like, wait, why does he know her name? Why would he take the time to learn Blackjack's on and off again girlfriend? Anyways, so there's a lot of tension about like, oh, she's gonna, you know, she's in danger. Oh no, she's in danger. And also like a Balefire missile is about to be shot at this location. Just to really ramp up the tension, like just everything's piling on in this. So like they freeze the Legate. Glory is there to like settle the command codes and all the launch codes, and like they get like the Zebra on the ground to like help them fix this rocket so they can get into space. And the climax of the scene is Blackjack, 21, and Scotch Tape getting into a rocket and being fired into space. Just as a Balefire rocket hits into the Luna Center and kills Glory by exploding her via nuke. And, like, the ending is Blackjack just having all...
She's fine. She had a parachute.
I was waiting for you to do that so much. You have no idea. But there is very much one of those, like, in the arms of an angel moments where she's, like, reflecting on all the moments of Glory.
All the other times she died. All the other times she, like, is almost certainly dead.
A fourth of that flashback is death flags. But yeah, we're going to space! Get ready!
She'll tumble out of an air vent on the moon.
She'll fall out of an oven. Fucking Christ. So I will. I'm gonna spoil this a little bit. She obviously survived this. The reason why she survived this is because the audience and I think the editors revolted over doing this because Somber famously just didn't like Glory at all and was trying to get rid of her all the time. That's why she dies with air quotes so many times because he wanted to get rid of her and then audience attention just always ripped her back into the story. And
I gotta tell you, I've been quiet for it, but the statement she obviously survives did hurt me. was a needle like driven in to some non-physical part of my being. Now that you've
tore that band-aid.
Now I am happy. Now there is a great happiness in my spirit because I'm just imagining the Sisyphean hell Somber lived in. At no point that the Glory haunts him. that she can't. He's trying so hard. Him. He is supreme god of this world. Cannot.
Can't kill this one southern racist.
This is a... God, it's been so long, I forgot her buzzing drawl. Okay. Before we go on, I'm going to waste a little time. This is an extremely nerdy reference. There was a short series a little while back, maybe decades ago now, I guess, in DC Comics, and I'm not sure whether or not it's even canon, called Emperor Joker.
Oh,
and the
yes.
premise is the Joker steals 99% of Mixia's Pitlick's powers. And becomes supreme deity of his local universe. But he can't kill Batman. He can't figure out how, because he's psychologically incapable he's a super genius, and he can twist his own mind in any pretzel he likes. But, by the end, Superman realizes, what's going on, and it's a similar thing to if someone says pink elephant, there's no way to stop yourself from thinking of a pink elephant. And the Joker very specifically goes, I'll show you. Now they don't even exist as concepts. Pink and elephants are no longer premises that exist in the universe. Yeah, but Batman. the Joker literally cannot get the concept of Batman out of his head, and he's contained Batman in a grave and tried to kill him an infinite number of times with all the force of all the power and all the cosmos, but can't stop thinking about Batman and thus cannot will Batman out of existence. And that is the personal hell that Somber exists in with Glory. It's beautiful. It makes me happy.
Glory is the best character. WTF, I love Glory now. As far as I know, what the story is that some editor really this was the the base breaker really was the idea of no, you can't just kill Glory. You can't just off her for no reason. And she's completely she has no narrative relevance anymore. Somber is uber predictable in a bunch of ways. And one of the things that's really predictable about bad writers is that they don't care about their characters past narrative utility. And narrative utility can come in a bunch of ways, but one of the main ways is they have to do something to serve the story. And Glory's role in the story is to be basically Blackjack's live-in mommy who takes care of all of her emotional problems for her. And that isn't happening anymore because 21 exists. Because 21 is now there for Blackjack, Glory has no narrative utility, and because Somber has no ability to compel the story without narrative utility, she has to die because he doesn't like her anyways. So might as well kill her off to up the stakes, show that this book 5 is serious business. But then people hated that, so she's kind of brought back. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but she's effectively brought back again in an utterly contrived way that only exists because people hated the decision. And
Yusamber had any courage in his bones, any virtues at all, he would respond to this pressure by counter-trolling. She would fall out of an air duct. And the only explanation we would ever get is she was wearing a parachute.
But yeah, like I could talk a lot about the idea of narrative futility and how it works in stories. And it's kind of one of those things that's like sort of hard and slippery to actually really grasp. But the basic thing that it boils down to is like bad writers care about their characters and they only see them as props to serve the protagonist. Like this is very prominent in like self-insert fiction, like any number of your cool detectives solving crimes kinds of fictions, or your badass leather trench coat wearing heroes with katanas kinds of fictions, where like no character matters. Like the protagonist basically lives in a weird solipsistic bubble in a moral wasteland where no person matters until the protagonist decides to interact with them. Like, we made a lot of jokes earlier in the story that, like, Blackjack has no agency, but it's, like, it's actually, like, less than that. It's not that she doesn't have agency. It's that no one else exists. They simply do not, they're not real until Blackjack is within the area. She's trapped in a tiny little bubble of her own hell. But yeah, that's the end of her chapter, though.
Kind of suspect that's probably the world Sombra lives in.
Yeah.
Like, that Somber is the only person, and like everybody he meets is just this weird Sombernoid, a meat thing that makes noises. Not even humanoid, because like to be human is to be Somber. Somber, I understand that you have a lot of problems. You have in the past, at the time of writing this story, dealt with a pretty severe depression, a lot of self-hatred, but don't worry, Somber, I hate you too.
No matter how much you hate you, believe us, we hate you more.
I wouldn't give him that much credit. Like, I don't think about Somber when we're not doing this podcast. I am blessedly free of this fucking thing while we're not recording.
Yeah.
Which is why it's so hard to recount. Anyway, is there anything better we could be doing?
Sorry. Don't worry about it. But yeah, anything recommending? This is another one of those, like, anything else kind of situations.
I mean, I've been getting into the only good isekai.
Well, kind of isekai, but yeah.
Yeah, which is My Next Life as a Villainous. All routes lead to doom is one of the, I think, is the official translation for the anime.
Yeah, because the light novel names are always insane.
Yeah. What is with that? Like, I kind of want to like find it. Let's see. You've probably heard about She-Ra. I can confirm that it's about as good as everybody seems to be gushing over it. I enjoyed it a lot. It seems like there was something else I wanted to recommend. Fighting the Power. If you have the physical, if you have the strength to fight back against the increasingly just naked fascism.
Yeah, I'm gonna link the like Black My Lives Matter like thing again.
Yeah, how to help. Yeah, like I think that's just gonna be a thing that we do every episode now. That link is gonna be like how to help out in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's my number one recommendation. If you're not confident that you can help out there in the world, like definitely like one of the things that it doesn't say that like I think maybe should be said more often. There are bail funds going around that you can contribute to, but like don't eat into that bail fund if at all possible. Don't get arrested for no reason unless you're part of an active effort to like fucking flood the Birmingham jail of 2000. Unless you're part of some like directed like action toward that end as an act of protest, don't feed the bail fund if you can help. Like don't feed the state bail system for no reason. Like don't and don't leech from these funds that are there to like get people who would otherwise be in danger, like dark-skinned people, out of those holding cells before something like before accidents befall them, before they mysteriously commit suicide. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Anyway, I got distracted with a bunch of horrors, as I was about to say. And if you don't feel confident in doing something now, take a moment to meditate, find out what it is that's preventing you from doing that, and work on that. Become a stronger person. Like, as much as we fucking commies talk about contributing to the greater wealth, the greater whole, before you can help somebody, you need to be in a position where you are strong enough to do so. Like if you're not strong enough to help others, find a way to make yourself strong enough that you can, is my recommendation. And don't give in to despair. The path of despair is the path of becoming like somber. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think that's all we got for today. You can check out Fi's extremely not safe for work Twitter at ThouArtFi. You can poke me. I've been active a little bit more again on my Twitter at WeirdingtonE, twitter.com. You can email us at the web zone, WeirdingtonESQ@gmail.com. Please remember, if you've got any big questions you want for our final episode, label them in the whatchamacallit, the title bar. Yeah. In the subject line.
Yeah.
Extravaganza!
Yes, and we'll put those letters aside so that we will get to them in the final epilogue chapter, which is coming really soon, so get those letters in, folks.
But otherwise, I am really getting tired. Like this thing is hurting me, and I think this project, for all that it was doomed to happen regardless, was a terrible mistake.
Black lives matter.
Black lives do matter. 10 million Yanks, if it takes them to tear the fascists down, down, down. If it takes them to tear the fascists down.